The Racing Pod.
Looking ahead to this year's Galway races? Then don't miss The Racing Pod live with Off the Ball. Join me, John Duggan and Johnny Ward, alongside special guests Joe Canning, Barry Geraghty and Paul Nolan, for an afternoon of racing insight, expert tips and plenty of crack. We'll be live from Mary Mullins Pub on Tuesday, July the 28th, previewing all the big action from Ballybrit with thanks to William Hill. Tickets are on sale now at offtheball.com/events. The Racing Pod live, July the 28th at Mary Mullins Pub. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tildenafil.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Welcome along. It is Will with you. It happened back in 1986. It happened in 1998. Can Argentina dump England out of the World Cup again? We will find out in about 3 hours' time. Keith Tracy is going to be with me for the football show. We're going to be talking as well about Spain's very controlling win against France last night. L'Equipe had the knives out straight away. Olise, 2. Dembele, 3. And Lucas Digne, who gave away the penalty, got a 2 as well in their player ratings. The Open Championship may be in Dublin soon, but the last golf major of the year very much focused on Royal Birkdale for this coming week. We'll be talking to John Hogan as Rory McIlroy bids to win his 7th major title. And Matt Williams will join me for Wednesday Night Rugby as well. Ireland bid to become the first team to beat New Zealand at Eden Park since 1994. The All Blacks haven't lost there in 52 test matches. On the News Round, we've got Ben Symes here with me. How are you, Ben?
I'm all right, Will. How are you?
And Eve Conway is here as well. I resisted calling both of you England fans because I didn't want to get Ben. I didn't want another Ben rant after last week. Last Wednesday, I was having a nice, subtle bit of a joke with you about your sweepstakes, and you went on a sweepstakes rant.
You didn't call me an England fan because it would have been libel. Is that why you didn't
call
me?
Slander if it's on the radio, Ben.
Slander, yeah. Same thing, Will.
Has to be written if it's
on. Well, yeah, it'd be written in my mind, all right. Yeah, definitely not an England fan for tonight. Wouldn't be for the tournament.
Oh, I was that was leading in nicely. I thought it would be like, just not for tonight because I don't like Argentina.
No.
When they play Spain, I'm England all the way.
No, I am definitely not rooting for England. I am in the Malvinas camp tonight, to put it one way.
Former Ireland international Declan Rice, the man who once kissed the Irish badge, is being interviewed on the BBC ahead of it. We were watching the montage before I came on. I noticed, obviously, in my intro, I've mentioned, Maradona, 86, 98, Diego Simeone getting the kick from David Beckham and all that. On the montage in the BBC, a lot more time went to Michael Owen's goal than the elimination. And David Beckham scored the penalty in 0-2, got more time than Maradona.
Well, you know, they're trying to build an atmosphere. I mean, wouldn't, if it was a montage that RTE were doing for an Ireland game or something like that, you wouldn't want to dwell on the many, many sad stories when you could just play the Troy Parrott goal over and over again.
Yeah, you know? I do appreciate that, in fairness to them. I mean, this to me, Ben, is a classic semi-final. There's obviously loads of history baked in, loads of World Cup history here too. Argentina defending champions. England obviously trying to end what 30 years very quickly became 60 years of hurt when it comes to the song. And Spain into the final, where I think both these teams are probably fancy taking them on. And again, it's like you will either have the champions of South America against the champions of Europe or a repeat of the Euros final.
This is probably the best semi-final we could have got, considering Argentina and England could not meet in the final. This is the final for Argentina. This is bigger than Argentina playing Spain for Argentinians. This is bigger than playing France. This is the biggest match Argentina could face. They haven't faced in a World Cup since 2002. They only beat them twice in a World Cup in 86 and in 98, both under kind of shrouded circumstances with Diego Maradona. And then also...
Okay, he handled the ball to the net, it's fine.
And we all remember Simeone as well. And there's a lovely poetry in that Juliano Simeone comes in and starts the day for Argentina. But, you know, you only get so much about this from the outside looking in. And you know, as a country who tends to have a general disdain for the English football team, we like to think that we know exactly how they're thinking, but we really don't. I went reading through Tiempo, which is like the Argentinian sports newspaper, and was just reading some of the articles today, and there's this amazing piece on the front page of their sports section by Alejandro Wall is the writer, and the title is what my old lady taught me about England. And the subheading just says, yesterday, he's at this game in Atlanta. Subheading says, yesterday, Monday, 13th July at 3:57 a.m, my mother passed away. They called her Bebis and she was little. Her name is Hilda Inez Vepo. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here in Atlanta, USA, to cover the biggest game Argentina have potentially ever had. And he goes on to just reference about how amazing his mother was and how she got him into journalism. And then the last kind of half of the article is all about what she taught him about England and how you were born to hate the English. And some of the notes in this are just amazing, like talking about obviously 1986 and 1998, but before that, talking about a game in 1962 when England won 3-1, talking about 66 when Alf Ramsey started, you know, leading the chorus of the England fans, calling them animals on the pitch against the Argentine players. This is long before the war in the Falklands or Malvinas Islands. And he goes on then to talk about Jorge Valdano, who we all remember, World Cup winner with Argentina, who spoke about, you know, it's not just about football, it's wider context with Argentina and England. So if England wanted to play the ball long, we would play the ball short. If they wanted to pass, we would dribble. It was whatever England did, we would do the opposite. Rodrigo de Paul is framed his jersey from the 2022 World Cup final and gave it to a veteran centre in Buenos Aires for veterans of the Malvinas War. He speaks that the he finishes the article just by saying, you know, talking about 2022 and beating France and Lionel Messi finally getting his World Cup and getting some recognition. And he says how, you know, talking about beating Qatar and it was palpable, but Argentina versus England is something else entirely. It's not the final, but it is. It's not Messi against Harry Kane. It's not Messi against any player. It's Messi against the English. And that is what this is for Argentina, because as much as they love Messi, and Messi eventually brought them to the World Cup, and he's obviously brought them a Copa America, and they went through a huge drought in the meantime. It was 1993 when they won the Copa America. The one thing that Messi has never done is beat the English on the biggest stage, which is the pinnacle for Argentinians, is beat the English on the big stage. And now at 39, he finally has the chance to do that.
But that's what's interesting to me. It's that this whole, both sets of players, both teams, it's been an entire generation since they've faced England. And I think from the message from the England camp this week has very much been, we're not thinking or talking about, well, obviously they're not going to talk about politics in their press conferences and everything. They're trying to stray away from that as much as they can. But I feel like it probably means more to the Argentinians, but for this, I mean, the England team is quite young, comparatively speaking. They probably were too young to even remember the last game that England faced Argentina in 0-2 for a lot of them. So
stop you youngsters, stop. I can remember it vividly that afternoon when Beckham put away that penalty.
They played in 0-5 a couple of years later in a friendly, and Messi was suspended because he got sent off in that first game under Peckerman in Hungary in a earlier that year when he got sent off 2 minutes after coming on. So that was in Geneva in 2005. Messi was, you know, sort of robbed of playing that day, but even at that, it wouldn't have been a meaningful game. It's interesting talking about the politics. Scaloni was saying in his pre-match press stuff, you know, this is just a match, this is just a match. And another piece I was reading in Tiempo today was saying how Maradona in 86, the day before, kept being asked about the Falklands War, and this is revenge for, you know, the I think it's over 500 died, Argentinians died in the war on the Malvinas. And Diego Maradona said, you know, this is just a match, this is just a match. And he kept that up. And then they said, they're in the tunnel waiting to come out. And he turned around to his Argentinian players and he said, these MF, they killed us, they robbed us, they destroyed us. Today we get revenge. And you would have to think that a similar sort of sentiment, considering the chance that Argentina were doing after they beat Switzerland when they're in the dressing room and it's, you know, those who don't jump are English and this is for Malvinas, Maradona and Messi, you would have to think it's going to be a similar sort of sentiment when they're about to walk out on the pitch this evening.
It's emotionally exhausting, Argentina's run to this stage where they've had to kind of dig deep to get to this point, to the semi-final. I was chatting to Dion, I know you were chatting on the show last night as well, and his feeling was that Argentina are A, no great chicks, and B, they've probably been lucky to even get to this point in the tournament. But before we hear from Thomas Tuchel from Eve in a second, just bring us up to speed in the teams, because we were outside and you were all over it. You had your various Argentine sources up to see what was happening with the teams. So Bring us the teams, Ben.
There's a couple of big news on both sides. I'll start with the Argentinians. And the big news is Rodrigo de Paul does not start for Argentina.
Hasn't been confirmed yet. He's been injured, because outside we were wondering, because he is kind of Messi's protective dog, both for club level last year and for Argentina.
Yeah, and there was a lot of questions about him before the tournament and would he still be up to it. I think he kind of proved he can still play at this level now. How well he can, I don't know. But he is listed on the bench. But then again, you are always listed on the bench unless you are that you cannot walk as a sub. So it's Emi Martinez keeps placing goal. Molina, Romero, Lisandro Martinez and Nicolas Tagliafico make up the back four. Simeone looks like he's going to play on that right, on that Rodrigo de Paul position. Paredes, Alexis McAllister and Enzo Fernandez, the rest of the midfield. And Lionel Messi joined by Julian Alvarez up front. For England, there are three changes from the quarterfinals. So Jordan Pickford keeps his place in goal. John Stones and Mark Gahey stay in centre half.
Kwanzaa suspended, that was going to be the case.
Reece James comes in to right back. Jed Spence comes in to left back. So Nick O'Reilly drops out. Ezri Konsa drops out. Declan Rice is fit enough to start in centre midfield alongside Elliot Anderson. Anthony Gordon keeps place on the left. Jude Bellingham keeps place in the 10. Harry Kane keeps place up front. The big news is on the right. Madueke is dropped. It is not Saka who starts on the right. It's Morgan Rodgers on the right wing for England. So big night for Morgan Rodgers. Big night for Juliano Simeone, who of course is dad. We all have those memories in 98. But Simeone's only played 71 minutes of football in this tournament and they all came in the dead rubber game versus Jordan in the group stage. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he copes with the intensity of all.
Before you bring us in on Thomas Tuchel in a second, Eve, it seems the one real problem position England have had in this tournament, aside from the injured right-backs, has actually been working out who plays right-side midfield. So Saka clearly didn't travel to this World Cup fully fit. Marek has played there a bit. Saka's played there a little bit. It seems that now they're very much focused on Gordon would play on the left rather than Rashford, but the right side of the attack, they just don't seem to have settled this down at all.
And it's interesting because, I mean, that was always going to be the case coming into this World Cup campaign with the amount of matches that Arsenal played last year. So, Saka, Madueke, Rice, we've seen in the past few games, I know he's been sick, cannot really get through a 90 to the full standard that he had been playing throughout the season. I'm interested to see Gordon and how he's going to play. Because I liked the idea of him as an impact substitution in kind of some of those early games that were being a bit lethargic in the opening half and then really until the hydration break in the second half. Thomas Tuchel is in this unenviable position right now of being at the kind of brink between being destroyed by the English media tomorrow for overthinking this starting 11, for not sticking with what he's done, which in the past couple of games, for leaving behind the likes of Phil Foden and Cole Palmer. Or tomorrow morning, we wake up and the headlines are that this is the greatest tournament manager England could have possibly hired and that actually his midfield choices have been perfect.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting one to watch. I'm still nervous.
Small margins. The only good news for Eve is that she's got Argentina in the sweepstake. Her heart might say England. So you win either way.
I mean, yeah, I would like to just clarify for the record that if Ireland are playing in the World Cup, I would be rooting for them. Listen, it's a very difficult position to be in.
Right, okay. Let's hear from Thomas Tuchel. What's he had to say ahead of the game?
Yeah, so as we alluded to, England playing Argentina in the next hour. And this will be the first time England face Argentina in over 20 years in the last match between the two countries, as Ben mentioned, being a friendly in 05. So it's a fixture rife with political and sporting history. But England boss Thomas Tuchel says his players will focus only on the match at hand.
I would say it's irrelevant, but I'm not sure about it. I think the players are very aware of both countries, what it means to them. If a fixture provides, like you said, so many iconic moments, I think you cannot just say it's just another football match, but as a coach, we do exactly that. Focus on what we can influence. We don't actually, me and my team, between us, we don't speak about the historic events. We don't speak about the iconic moments. It's in itself iconic enough, and the tension is big enough. So we try exactly the opposite and try to influence the players and what we want them to do, how to behave in different situations. And we try to reduce the informations. The bigger the stage gets, the bigger the tension grows. So hopefully we can simplify the messages enough that they can execute it. Yeah, we try exactly what is maybe not possible, but The magnitude of the match is just what it is. I think it does not help if we engage emotionally in that.
Thomas Tuchel there, the England manager. We'll be talking a bit more about France and Spain on the Football Show. Keith Tracy's going to be with us. He's going to watch the game. Ben and I will be here later on, and we'll keep an eye on that. We'll talk about not the best of performances from France, but I think to Spain's great credit, shut them down wonderfully last night. Now, the golf, we'll be talking to John Hogan in about 15 minutes' time about this year's Open. Well, it looks like in the future the Open could be coming to the Republic of Ireland.
It could. So the RNA, who organised the Open Championship today, say they're in talks with the Irish government to bring the Open to Portmarnock Golf Club. Chief Executive Mark Darbin says they're close to a deal to bring the club into the Open's rotation. The Open, as you said, has never been held in the Republic of Ireland, but has been held in rural Portrush three times in 1951, 2019 and 2025. Darbin is hoping to have a clearer view by the end of this year.
I believe we can take an Open Championship there. What we're looking to do is to build a model that opens up opportunities for the AIG Women's Open and the Open for many, many years to come. And so that's the dialogue we're in right now with the Irish government, and we're optimistic that those discussions are heading in the right direction. We're hoping to have a pretty clear view by the end of the year for sure.
And then Padraig Harrington, speaking today, believes that Portmarnock would be an unbelievable Open venue.
Portmarnock would be just an unbelievable venue. When it's held in Irish Open, there's just no event. But the only Open in a capital city. So, you know, the crowds, the atmosphere, people come out, the golf course is fantastic. The space it's capable of hosting an event of that size. Golf course is... It's unusual, the golf course, it's very fair, which is strange for a links golf course. You know, it's actually got quite flat fairways and flat greens. So I think players will like it.
Barry on the WhatsApp. And if you do want to get in touch on the WhatsApp, 0879 180 180. Tuchel's biggest hurdle is that he's not English. Every World Cup tournament winner has been led by a manager who shared the same nationality as the national team. All the other managers in the semi-finals were born in the country they're managing. And look, some of the press coverage before the tournament even got underway wasn't particularly favourable about Thomas Tuchel. So keep the comments coming in.
The managers who made the finals for a different team.
This is like Thursday trivia, but on a Wednesday. Once upon a time, we used to have Thursday trivia, and then Colin Boog decided to sink it on us. Nathan and I used to have a lot of fun on a Thursday. Mm. Richie, Nathan and I would play Thursday trivia, played along with the listeners, have a bit of crack, and then Colin asked us a question 1 week which had no answer to it, and Thursday trivia died overnight.
Well, I'll tell you, we have about 7 minutes left in the news round. If anyone can get the answers in via text, the two managers not from the nation that they were born in. So managing a different country than the one they were born in have made the final of the World Cup, two of them in history. If you can get your text in the next 5 minutes, I will give you the answers at the end of the news round.
I like it. Okay. WhatsApp preferably, because we're keeping an eye on the phone at the moment.
Sorry, 0879. Yeah, forgot to
53106 if you want to send it to the News Talk text line. Or if you're playing along on YouTube, why not? Just stick a comment in there and we'll see if you can work out Ben's teaser. How many answers you said? Two managers from outside the country? Okay. That is the Open. We'll be talking to John Hogan about that and Royal Birkdale and this year and potentially what happens there. Scottie Scheffler missing the cut of the weekend, by the way, at the Scottish Open. First time in 4.5 years. This is a bit like New Zealand and Eden Park, a most remarkable record that came to an end. There is some good news for the Dublin ladies footballers.
There is. So they've been handed a boost ahead of their All-Ireland semi-final this weekend, as captain Carla Rowe is expected to be available. Defending champions Dublin face Kerry in Semple Stadium at 5:15 on Sunday. Rowe wasn't fit to start Dublin's quarter-final against Cork, but she did come on late in the game. Her teammate Niamh Heatherton, speaking to Off the Ball's Rachel Sheehan this week, says it's good that Dublin are peaking at the right time.
Probably leaders all over the pitch, which is great. It's a testament to the quality of our squad. So,
promising enough signs, though, that we saw her coming on with just a couple of minutes to go. It must bring such a boost.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, Carla's such a leader and has been for how many years. Having her coming onto the pitch, you know, just for that calmness towards the end of the game when it was may have been a little bit frantic in the last couple of minutes. But yeah, no, hopefully we'll have her back this weekend as well, which is great.
Oh, very good. Yeah, so she's looking okay injury-wise?
Yeah, exactly. It's good for, you know, peaking at the right time.
All right, Rachel Sheehan is going to be going across to cover the ladies' football this coming Saturday as well. We are into that season where we got the two semi-finals this coming Saturday with the Camogie semis the week after, and of course the All-Ireland hurling final this Sunday, football final the week after. So a huge, huge time for Gaelic games here and Off the Ball. Speaking of that final on July the 26th with the Gaelic football, the news is out. We heard last night that Kerry won the toss, so Kerry will wear their home kit. What are Mayo going to be wearing?
So Mayo will debut a new white All-Ireland final jersey in their match against Kerry on July 26th. With both counties' home and away jerseys clashing, the Central Competitions Control Committee held a draw, as you said yesterday, to determine which side would wear their first choice colours. So Kerry will wear their traditional green and gold, while Mayo will debut a white jersey, the same colour they wore in the 1951 All-Ireland final, which was their most recent victory.
I don't know, Ben. I mean, the temps fate entirely. It goes, we're going to kick back. We're going to forget that the curse happened and the alleged bad luck and all that. And we will just tempt fate by wearing the actual jersey that we wore back then.
What curse, Will?
Exactly. What curse?
What curse? It's a white jersey. The curse is gone. It's lifted. It's gone forever.
I'd like the poetry, you know, should they win. It would be beautiful.
It's the most amazing move by Mayo County Board and Andy Moran of all time. And I, look, I enjoyed Andy. You can get a chance to talk about it in the show. Yeah, I enjoyed Andy last weekend where he went, who cares if the fans go enjoy themselves? It makes absolutely no difference to the team. And that should be true of the Wicklow supporters last week in the Tailteann Cup who went crazy. The Cork hurling fans who somehow took some of the blame for the fact that the Cork hurlers didn't perform in the second half of that semi-final. Let fans enjoy themselves. That is the whole point. And if a Mayo fan can't enjoy being back in the All-Ireland final for the first time in 5 years, what's the point of being a sports fan?
Here's one for you.
Go on. More Tailteann trivia, isn't it?
No. So this question. So the Mayo fans have been attributed that like hype question around the weekend, and the Cork fans have been attributed the same thing. Yet the historical, let's say, honours list of both counties is vastly different. Mm-hmm. How have both counties been given the same mantra?
It's a good point. The winners write the narrative, don't they? Think that.
It's just interesting, like that both have been accused of the hype affecting the counties, and like Cork historically have won a lot more hurling titles than Mayo have won football titles.
I presume part of the problem here is that if you are successful, your support become a major reason for your success. Oh, they've got the most amazing support and they carry them through the tough times. If you lose, it becomes, do you know what, actually there's just so much hype around that team, can't help. And we reach for reasons why teams aren't successful. I think we make them up as much as anything. I guarantee if the Cork hurlers had won the other week, they'd have, say they'd beaten Galway, you would have said it's amazing that they can carry 50 or 60,000 supporters and they've got them behind them going to the All-Ireland final. If they lose, oh, too much expectation. Trains were booked in advance, as if you wouldn't book your train in advance for the All-Ireland final anyway, when you know you can cancel it for free. But that was complete and utter nonsense as well. Leinster, speaking of support, they're going back to the RDS, which will be officially called, I believe, the Laois Stadium in advance of next year. And they're going to have a test. Well, I shouldn't say test match. Their minds of rugby is something totally different. But they're using a match as a test game there.
They are. So Leinster will face Zebra in an operational test event in September at the redeveloped Laois Arena. So this pre-season match will be the first time Leinster have played there in over 2 years. Of course, the redeveloped arena will have a capacity of 20,000. And the game is scheduled for Saturday, September 12th.
Okay, we've got a couple of stories we want to get through as well. The Irish women cricketers losing out today?
They did. So West Indies women defeated the Irish women's cricketers team by 64 runs today. This was the third and final match of the 50-over ODI series between the two nations, with the West Indies winning all three games. Ireland's next series is against England in September, and the first game will be played in Leicester.
And tell us about the Department of Sport and the funding announcement from today.
Yeah, so they've announced a €4 million investment under their Women in Sport programme in 2026. The allocation is double the amount invested by the state 4 years ago and is designed to promote women's involvement in sport, including active participation, coaching and governance. Established in 2005, the programme has invested €30 million in women's sports. According to the Irish Sports Monitor 2025, 46% of Irish women participate in sport weekly.
Okay, golf writer John Hogan, who you can read in Golf Digest and Golf World across the Open this week, is standing by in a moment. I have been checking the live doc that we keep on the production side. I don't think anybody sent the right answer in yet. So do you want to give us the answer?
Do you want to guess? Do you have a guess?
I can't.
Well, if you don't know, it's one of those, if you don't know it, you don't really.
Yeah, these could be tricky. So go on. Who's brought a team to a final that was not from the nation?
1978. Ernst Happel from Austria.
Was in charge of
the Netherlands.
Of the Dutch.
And 1958. Sweden.
No, who was manager?
George Rayner, Englishman.
Oh, okay. They would have been difficult to get in defence of the listeners, but no one was smart enough to get both of them in on time, unfortunately. So we have to put people out of their misery.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.